On this night, it was 22 years ago, of course, that Buddy Holly died in the plane crash, and we have on the phone one of the original Crickets, Nicky Sullivan.
Hello, Norman.
Great to talk to you, Nick.
How you doing up there?
Hey, we're doing well. It's pretty cold.
Well, it's cold down here, too, but who cares? We're having fun.
Okay, you're living down in Missouri.
Yes, sir. I'm just outside of Kansas City in Blue Springs.
How long you been there, Nicky? Is that your home?
Oh, about 3 years. It is my home. In fact, I'm just about ready to call it my hometown. We really love it down here. A lot of great people.
That's Matt Lucas territory. I know that.
Yes, it is.
Nicky, you, I think, were the first to leave the Crickets. Is this true?
That is true. I left in December of 1911 after the 80-day tour that we made. That was our first tour with That'll Be the Day, and Oh Boy was released during that time, and Peggy Sue was released during that time. And I did quit. Well, I'll tell you, after that long tour and all of that work that we did for the last 6 months, we paid a high price for it because it was like 21 to 24 hour days, and your eating habits and sleeping habits are all just forgotten. And trying to get your laundry done and things like that, you just don't really have any time to enjoy what you're doing. I mean, other than being on stage, that certainly is enjoyable. But you do have to have some time away, like anything, and we really didn't have a chance to do that. So, and maybe in haste and maybe not, because I don't regret my decision to leave the Crickets, but I might have done it in haste, because I believe the group would have stayed together if we had just had some time off, and that time we were never afforded.
Those package shows were rough. I'll tell you, Nicky, I saw that show, because it was the biggest show of stars, and it was Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Paul Anka, and the...
Everly Brothers?
Who?
Everly Brothers.
Everly Brothers were on there.
Mike McFadder.
The Spaniels.
You bet.
Yep, Paul Williams and his big show of Stars Orchestra.
Yes, sir.
You were in Toronto, and I was a Fats Domino fan, so I came to see the Fat Man, and I remember you closed the first half of the show, and you couldn't get off the stage.
You know, that's really true. I've always remembered that. I mean, we got a few encores throughout that tour, but nothing like we got there in Canada. The Canadian people were absolute superb people to us. They appreciated our music. That particular night, if I'm not mistaken, we either got four or five encores. And the only reason I think we didn't get any more is because we ran out of songs. We played an Elvis Presley song, and that ended that.
That's a classic. What did Nicky Sullivan do when he left the Crickets? Oh, you had a record called It's All Over, didn't you?
Well, I did. I actually did some recordings in Lubbock, Texas at a small studio that was trying to open up, just for the heck of it. And it sounded pretty good, so I met a publisher that, you know, with the Crickets, met him in Houston and let him listen to them, and he thought he could do something with them. And about 2 months later, they were released on Dot Records. And the name of the song, or one side of it, was It's All Over. And the song did pretty well. We got a great splash, you know, in advertising. They had full-page color ads, Best Buy of the Week, and then, you know, full-page color ads and Best Buy of the Week and Best Hit of the Week and Pick of the Week. We were really going in the right direction, doing the right thing, but I never would sign a contract with Norman, my former manager or the Crickets manager. And I wouldn't sign one with him because he wanted too much, so we just kind of let the record die. And then after that, I went back to Norman Petty with Gene Evans, who was a local Lubbock boy, singer, almost a Buddy Holly imitator. He could imitate Buddy fairly well. But we did four sides in Clovis, New Mexico with Norman, two of which were released. And then about 5 years later, after I moved to California in 63 and stayed out there, it was 61, I guess. So I stayed out there about 8 years, and I had a band. Five of those years, the same group stayed together, and we had one record released out there, which was really, I think, the worst record I ever recorded.
What was that one?
I don't even want to tell you.
Oh, come on. We want to know. We want to hear the worst record you ever did.
It was on Jolie, J-O-L-I record, and it was called, what was the name of it? Let me think here. I don't even really want to tell you, darn it. It really doesn't matter anymore. And the flip side was, You Better Get a Move On. And it was... I didn't sing that the way I wanted to. I sang it like the producer wanted me to sing it. And it turned out to be rather an embarrassment. But in that meantime, around 1960, I went to Phoenix, Arizona, and recorded 7 songs, and I never had them released or anything. All the songs I did write, and those songs are going to be released here shortly in England on Roller Coaster Records. There seems to be a big demand for 1950-style music now, and they're going to release those records over there in an album form. And that's really about it up to date.
Have you toured England, Nick?
No, I did not. That's one of the things I regret. I really would have loved to have gone to England.
Yeah, Nick, what are you doing in the business now? Are you playing much, or have you settled down into a 9-to-5 gig? Or?
Well, I'm not in a 9-to-5 gig, but I am settled down more or less. I am a national accounts representative for a large leasing company. It's financial. And I travel the 4-state area and around Kansas, Nebraska, and so forth, and through this area. And I still write some when I get the mood or when something strikes me. Well, I'll sit down and write a song or two. And but I'm not pushing it. However, John Beecher came over from England here about a month ago and wanted to know if I would be interested in sending my songs to him. And I said I would if it'd make him happy, because I'm not doing anything with them. And the only actual performing I do would be with the Clear Lake concert in Clear Lake, Iowa, every February 3rd or around that date, which is in memory of Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Richie Valens, primarily Buddy Holly.
Now, that's coming up. You're going to be there this weekend, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Boy, we're going to have a ball.
Okay, that is in the, is it actually in the same auditorium?
Well, it's in the same surf ballroom. That's the place where the tour last played before Buddy and the 2 other guys were killed. And they were, the plane went down about 10 miles outside of Mason City, Iowa. So really that's about 15 miles from Clear Lake. But that was the place, the very last place that Buddy Holly played.
Del Shannon's going to be on that bill this weekend.
Sure is. And I'll tell you, I just talked to I think it was Fred a while ago and told him that, Del Shannon still sounds like his records. It's incredible.
Yes, I've had the pleasure of catching Del a couple of times the last 2 years, and
super nice guy.
He stands up the test of time.
He sure does.
Who else is going to be there?
Well, this year there'll be Carl Perkins.
Oh, right.
You remember Carl?
Yeah, I ran across him last year.
He's back in the business very heavy now, and he's going to be there. And I understand that 2 of the members of his band are his sons, and that ought to be very, that's going to be moving, because you know, to have your family follow you in your chosen career, that's got to be a tribute to the man. And the White Sidewalls from the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. And to me, that is the finest group of young people that I believe I've ever met. And in my opinion, that's the finest performing musical group anywhere in the world. I've never seen a better group.
Sounds like a great show. This album that's coming out in England, when do you think it's going to be out?
It was supposed to have been out about a year ago, but finances and rough times in England, forced him to hold off. But when he was here last month, we did the album liner notes for the back of the album, and he's thinking sometime, I would imagine, April, May, somewhere right in that area. Hopefully.
Well, Nicky, you have to contact us when it comes out, because there are an awful lot of people interested in the Nicky Sullivan album.
Well, yeah, apparently there is, because he... John seems to think he's got about 10,000 copies pre-sold in England, and I'm sure that a lot of people in the society would like to pick up some of them. At least that's what I've been told. So, I mean, we're not looking for a hit record, you understand? This is something that is available and people do want, and if that's what they want, they should have it. To heck with the money, let's just do whatever they want.
It's a labor of love, like the Clear Lake concert this weekend.
Most of my career in show business has been a labor of love.
Nicky, do you ever, or have you ever, kept in contact with the Crickets, Sonny Curtis, and the rest of them?
I don't get to talk to them much anymore because they're touring quite a bit now with Waylon. But we did a couple of things together, and down in Lubbock and up in Hartford, Connecticut, at the conventions. And they're good people. I assure you, we get along fine. There are no animosities. There never was. All I can say is that is a career that I wish them the best in, and they're doing very well in. It is just a career that I chose not to pursue after 9 years of it.
Nicky, where were you February the 3rd, 1959?
I was in Lubbock, Texas. I'd been out on a date on February the 2nd, the previous night. In fact, I had been out just most of the night with her. And I'll let you use your imagination from there on. But about 7 o'clock that morning on February 3rd, I got a phone call from a girl. And she said, when I answered the phone, she said, have you heard what happened to Buddy? And I said, no, what? And she said, well, Buddy's been killed in a plane crash. And I was about half asleep, and I didn't really know how to take it, whether it was serious or not. But apparently I did take it serious because I just hung up the phone. My mother was out at the country club playing golf, and I called out and had her paged off the golf course. And I told her to call Mrs. Holly and to see what we could do to help out. And when she called Mrs. Holly, apparently Mrs. Holly did not know. And my mother said, well, actually, she asked Mrs. Holly, is it true what I've heard about Buddy? And Mrs. Holly said, I don't know what. So she didn't know what we were talking about. So my mother says, well, let me check into it a little bit further, and I'll call you right back. So she hung up, called me back, and said, please call the pastor at the church. She doesn't know about it yet. So I called the pastor at the church, and he was already on his way. He wasn't there. So I hung up the phone, and I didn't know really what to do at that time. In fact, I didn't do much of anything. And I guess about an hour later, I called over to the Hollies, and Larry Holly answered the phone, and I knew then that, in fact, they did know about it. But it was a shame that as I understand, Mrs. Holly heard about it over the radio before the pastor got to the home.
Isn't that tragic?
Yeah, it is tragic. It certainly is.
Nikki, a couple of things. The movie, a lot of inaccuracies in the Buddy Holly story, but it captured the period very well. Tell me, there's a little thing in there about how the crickets were named, that there was actually a cricket in the studio. Is that true?
Well, no, it's not true. We actually chose the name while sitting at Jerry Allison's home. We were all in his bedroom, had been practicing, and we sat on the beds and trying to think up names, and everything we thought of had been used. So we pulled out an encyclopedia and looked under insects, because that seemed to be the current thing to do. And we just kept going down through each one until we came across cricket. And I believe the definition was an insect romantically referred to as making music with its legs.
Wow.
In fact, the cricket and music tied together shows that. Now, during one of the recording sessions, we recorded I'm Gonna Love You Too, which is one of the songs I wrote. And in the background, in the echo chamber, there was a cricket. And everybody tried their best to get that cricket out of that echo chamber because it was messing things up. We never could. And if you listen on the final or the actual record that was released, you can hear the chirping cricket at the end of the record. Even though the record came out under Buddy Holly's name.
Isn't that a classic?
Yeah, it really is.
That's great. Tell me about, Bill said, the president of the fan club, make sure you ask Nikki about the phone booth incident when they found out they sold a million records.
Yeah, we were on that first tour, and we hadn't been on very long. We were still on the East Coast where it actually started. And I'm thinking we were around Washington, D.C. or in the Virginia area. And we got a telegram from Norman telling us that our records... our record had, in fact, looked like it was going to sell a million, and asked us to call him. So we all went across the street to a phone booth, and Buddy went inside and dialed the phone and got Norman on the call. And Norman proceeded to start to tell him about our having our first gold record, and Buddy opened the phone booth and had us all step inside, and he pulled the telephone away from his ears so we could all hear Norman telling us that our first record was, in fact, a gold record. It had sold a million copies. And Buddy had tears in his eyes, and, well, actually, I guess we all did, really. And it was a very touching moment, the fact that we had done something that, really, Joe B. and I would have never guessed would have happened. And I'm sure, I know Jerry and Buddy wanted it to happen very badly, and I think we were just all caught up in the emotion of actually having the truth come right then.
Another great night had to be the Apollo Theater. Or were you with the crickets then? Is that really true?
Great night.
Hey?
The same that night, the same the next afternoon, and the next night. And we got moved off to a very bad position in the show because the people didn't really take to us at all. But I believe it was on the third night We'd gone through three afternoons and two evenings, but on that third night, we decided to make a, Buddy decided to make a change in the songs we were doing, and we opened the show, opened our part of the show with a song called Bo Diddley.
Right.
And I'll guarantee you those people warmed up. And they took to us every day and every night since that time. And apparently we did the right thing. But I don't believe that they were that shocked as it shows in the movie. I know it wasn't that. They might have been maybe a little bit shocked that we were the Crickets, in fact, a white group. But they did, after they realized that we had soul in our music, they took to us very well. It was a very trying experience, I'll assure you. It made us very, very nervous.
Tell me, was that the biggest show of Stars?
I'm sorry?
Was that the biggest show of Stars or a separate show?
This was a 3-week tour that we did prior to the biggest show of Stars. We started in Washington, D.C. for a week, Baltimore for a week, and then New York City for a week.
They showed Sam Cooke in that show. Was he actually on that show?
He was not. We never did get to meet Sam Cooke, nor did we tour with him. If they had used Clyde McFatter, or an imitation of that, it would have been, ideal.
Do you remember who else was on there? It was Clyde McFatter.
Oh boy, the Drifters, Frankie Lyman, Laverne Baker, of course, the Everly Brothers, Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, the Spaniels, the Hearts, not the Hearts, I'm wrong on that one.
The Charms?
Yes.
Who?
The Bobettes.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Lee.
Yes.
So that was pretty close to the biggest show of Stars. It wasn't too much difference.
Well, I'm
really.
Sorry. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't follow your question. I apologize. That first 3-week tour, oh boy, the Bobettes. Doggone it. Frogman Henry.
Frogman, eh?
Yeah.
That's right. When he ain't gotten a home in some of those.
Got it. Yes, sir.
Boy, you're doing really well dredging them up, I'll tell you. Nicky, I gotta go.
You remember who was on that first tour.
Yeah.
That was really a rather unique experience. Now, we played those first 3 weeks to total black audience. Okay? And we were the only white people around. And we weren't worried about it. In fact, we never really thought anything about it until somebody mentioned it later on. Because we were at home. We were doing music, and they seemed to be enjoying it everywhere we went. So I loved it, and I know the rest of the guys did.
Well, if you could play before them, you could play before anybody, I think, Nicky.
Well, it's not the question of playing before them. You got to make them happy like anybody.
That's right.
And they apparently did like what we were doing, and we enjoyed what we were doing, and certainly there was no there were no racial themes at all at the whole time that we toured, in that whole 1957 year. We never really had any racial problems at all, none whatsoever.
Well, we're running out of time, running out of tape. I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to phone you next week and ask you how the show was.
Norman, I would sincerely appreciate it, sir.
You going to be home by next Monday?
I'm not sure what days I will be. I'll be home Monday night, but I think I'm going to be leaving Tuesday to go back to Iowa to actually work, and then I'll be home Friday night.
Okay, I'll try and raise you next week, and maybe we can talk about the show.
Norman, I sincerely appreciate it, and I sincerely appreciate you calling me, and let me talk to the people up there.
Thanks for your wonderful memories.
Thank you very much, Norman.
Every day it's getting better, getting more cards and getting more letters.